Welcome to the Dirty Lazy Girl podcast. I'm Stephanie Laska, best-selling author and creator of Dirty Lazy Keto.
And I'm Tamara Snezik, professor of sociology. We believe there are many paths, often unconventional, to achieve your goals. But we get stuck thinking we have to follow experts and fixed set of rules.
Well, as the leader of the Dirty Lazy Keto Facebook support group with over 200,000 members, I see people are hungry for a fresh approach, not just for weight loss, but to help live their very best life. Season 2 of the Dirty Lazy Girl podcast will provide lifestyle advice, lots of fun support, and practical tips to help you at home. Because you know what? You don't have to be perfect to be successful. Join us.
Today is a very special episode because I'm going to talk to Stephanie Laska, my wonderful co-host, about her brand new book, Dirty Lazy Keto, Get Started Losing Weight While Breaking the Rules, that is coming out May 5th. That's Cinco de Mayo. And so you can pre-order your book now. And in fact, there's some awesome pre-order bonuses. Stephanie, right?
Yes, you know my love language is gifts. I've shared that on the podcast. I really do love to give away things. I know it's a little silly of me. But right now, my publisher is offering a free fridge magnet of the Dirty Lazy Keto Food Pyramid with any pre-order. And a link to redeem that is on my website, dirtylazyketo.com/books. And it's while supplies last between now and Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, and it's a great magnet. It's huge.
It's huge. Well, you know what? When you go to the fridge and you want something to eat, You know, it's tempting to want to reach for stuff that maybe, you know,
you didn't
really think you wanted. So it's helpful to have that visual reminder right there in the fridge. Like, hey, choose this, choose that.
Yeah. And people will want to order this book because I got my advanced copy and it's amazing. And so I thought I should get to interview you so people can get a little sneak peek of what they might get when they get the book. So are you ready to be interviewed?
I am. And I have a surprise for you, Tamara.
Oh, what's
that? I love surprising you on air. After, I know, right? She's like, what? So after we're done with our recording, McMillan Audio is actually going to insert a small excerpt of me reading the audiobook at the end of this podcast. So they're actually going to take our podcast and add that to the very end. So make sure you give it a listen. You'll get to hear just me reading a chapter from the book or an excerpt.
Oh, wow.
Cool, huh?
Nice.
We're so fancy at Dirty Lazy Girl podcast.
And they're going to be all sounding all fabulous.
I know, in New York City.
New York.
We'll have to put our game face on, sister.
I know. I'm like, I'm almost embarrassed because it took us like 20 minutes to get our sound right.
Just to get the microphone plugged in correctly.
No, serious. Oh, well. Struggle's real. Okay, but I'm excited.
It's happening. We're on.
Okay, so I am going to ask you the first question, which was, what made you want to write your book, Dirty Lazy Keto, Get Start Losing Weight While Breaking the Rules?
Why? Well, Tamara, I appreciate you asking that question. What made me want to write this book is I feel like I finally have come up with a solution to the weight loss riddle. For myself, I have struggled with being overweight since I was in the second grade. I have always been overweight, always. I remember being on diets and my parents trying to bribe me with Jordache jeans in the second grade. I must have been 8. So I have a long history of being on every diet in the world. And my weight, it just continued to skyrocket. It got much worse as an adult. I know Tamara has known me throughout this whole journey. And I think when we first met, Tamara, I weighed probably close to 300 pounds. I was classed as morbidly obese, 3 on the BMI scale. I wore size 24, 26 clothing. Basically like a size 3X, 4X at Walmart. I felt very ashamed. I thought something was wrong with me. I felt I needed fixing. And I had been told that I did not have any willpower. And all of those things just made me feel like crap, I'll tell you. But once I figured this out, Tamara, this took me a little while of trial and error. But once I figured it out and I called it Dirty Lazy Keto, I felt really confident that my weight loss was going to stick. And that's when I thought, I'm going to write this down. Like, I felt compelled. Like, it was like the fountain of youth. Yeah. Seriously. Like, how is this possible? And now I'm getting all fired up because there's no way I could have kept it a secret. So I wrote it and I was determined to get the word out there. And that's why I wrote the story.
I'm so glad you did, because I know people will really relate to your book. Like, let me just start with a basic one, because part of the title of your book is that you're breaking the rules. So tell people, like, what rules are you breaking?
Well, Dirty Keto definitely means break the rules. And I even put that in my title. It's like, break the rules and lose the weight. Because real life is not black and white. In my opinion, in order to lose weight, I needed more flexibility. And most diets are very all or nothing. It's like, oh, if you don't do this and buy these expensive crap, then, you know, you won't be successful. And I completely disagree. I think strict rules are impossible to follow. I could do well for like 2 hours or 2 days tops. And then I would mess up. And then I'd feel terrible. I'd feel ashamed, hopeless. I'd end up feeling worse about myself and I would give up. So on a very big level, I think that's what breaking the rules means. And then, you know, it just keeps going. I think my whole life I've been taught fat is wrong. Fat is evil. You know, I have to eat whole grains. I've actually had someone tell me I would be malnourished if I didn't start eating toast. I'm like, wow. I don't think so. I don't need toast to survive. But even, you know, a lot of critics will say, oh, you shouldn't eat eggs or fat because that causes high cholesterol. People tell me, oh, you can't lose weight if you're snacking between meals or eating big portions. And even people say, oh, you can't have dessert and lose weight. And I set out to prove all those people wrong, and I did. My way works too, Mr. Critic.
It does. And I love you have a whole list of myths, and they're like every diet I've ever been on. Like, you know, fat is bad. And I'm like, it's crazy, but
it really is.
But it's refreshing. Like, it's not a list of restrictive rules that make you feel horrible, like you said. So that's what's awesome about your book. And in fact, that was my next question. Like, what is so different about your book from all the other diet books?
Well, I think mainly there's no judgment about your lifestyle. I think that's key, just as a big umbrella term about dirty, lazy keto. There's no judgment. If you want to drink Diet Coke or beer or put sugar-free sweetener in your coffee or even drink like sugar-free Red Bull, like do it. You know, this is your life. You need to be able to have lunch meat or peanut butter, you know, shredded cheese, a protein bar. These are normal foods. And my family, we eat fast food. We shop at Walmart. I don't buy expensive, you know, fancy pants type ingredients that are going to blow my family's budget. So that's one thing. I think that Dirty Lazy Keto is more affordable. I think it's flexible. I think it's doable. Like I mentioned, other diet books, you know, keto included, they're very black and white. It's always set up as a do or die situation where you have to follow the rules and you have to eat all this stuff. And if you don't, it doesn't work. Well, I think there's another way. So no thanks, buddy. I don't want, that's what I like, no thanks, buddy. I don't want any of that. My book is the opposite of all of that. I think that losing weight is not just about cutting carbs. It's so much more. And the companion guide that I wrote is going to help people from their whole journey, from the very start to the finish. Because I wrote this book, Tamara, I think people will trust me. I'm not like a nutritionist or some kind of expert. I'm just a regular mom, and this is my story. I mean, I figured this stuff out on my own.
You know, one other thing I would add that I think is different about your book is it's very relatable. Like, you know, you and your no thanks, buddy. You know, you use your very like relatable language. You know, what is that one Buddha something? Buddha.
Oh, the Buddha used to.
Yeah, buddy used to.
The buddy used to syndrome. Like, but I used to weigh, you know, 120 in high school. But I used to, you know, run a mile in 10 minutes. But I used to do that. I'm like, get over yourself. Like, we need to get back to where you're at now. You know, if you're 50 years old or 60 or 42, start where you're at and make realistic goals for yourself. And then I'll help you get to the finish line. But yeah, the first chapter I talk about, like, just starting off with realistic goals and, you know, getting to know who you are right now and your own habits, because that's the key, right?
Yes. And you do it in a language that's fun and sassy and not stuffy and scientifical, which is another of your little words you use.
Right. I know. In the preface, Dr. Mike Jones, he's an obesity specialist in Virginia, and he cracks up at my language, and he works with a whole medical center. He's a physician with other doctors in West Virginia that help patients manage their weight. And he always cracks up at my language because he's like, Stephanie, it's helpful to explain this stuff in a way that's common sense. You know, a doctor can say it to you blue in the face about diabetes and insulin shots and, you know, blood sugar levels and A1Cs. But if that doesn't make sense and connect with someone who's in love with potato chips and can speak the language that people understand, then I don't think the message will get out. So I just try to be honest. I don't talk anything fancy. You know, if you guys like how I talk on the podcast, then you're in luck because that's exactly how I write. Nothing scientifical, right?
Exactly.
Nothing. I mean, I feel like I'm trying to offer solutions, and I do it in a way with girlfriend style advice. You know, not just on what to eat, but how to overcome a lot of the obstacles. Because let's face it, I don't know about you, but I have in the past lost a little weight and then gone out to celebrate with like a sundae. Like, why did I do that? You know, or, you know, you're losing weight and everything's going great. And then you go to happy hour and all your friends are having cocktails and appetizers. And then you all of a sudden you think it's a good idea. So I feel like part of the book addresses those kind of real life situations with practical solutions on how to get through it and still come out feeling happy and confident with who you are.
Yes. So if someone's totally new to Dirty Lazy Keto, what can they expect inside your book? Like what actually is the layout of the content?
Okay. So the very first half of the book is super hands-on and practical. We all start a diet and you're like, okay, what do I eat? No one cares about anything else. Like, what do I eat? Tell me the meal plan. Tell me what do I eat for breakfast tomorrow? How do I start? So the first half of the book is just super hands-on, practical, you know, I recommend this, not that, and this is why. And it just explains the keto diet in a way that is simple and it's funny and people get it. And that's the feedback that I've gotten. We go over super basics, like I say we, like there's a team, it's just me. I go over how to read a nutrition label, just an overview, like I said, about all the terms, the glossary, all the words that are used in keto land. And then really it goes to the next level. So after you get your grocery list, your meal plan, your foods that you want to eat and not eat, then we go on to the next part because we all know cutting carbs is just a tiny part of the weight loss riddle. What happens next, like I was mentioning about the cake pushers or dealing with relationship issues, you know, when your family doesn't support you. That's the second half of the book. And that's where the support guide really comes in handy.
Nice.
And like you said, I think it's funny if I say so myself. Yeah. Relatable, easy to understand.
Yeah.
It's all just from a normal person.
Yeah. Like you can buy all the ingredients from Walmart from your recipes. Like this is not fancy.
In fact, that was a condition of mine. You know, when we worked, like my husband and I, we've written the cookbooks as well. And that was a condition of ours. Like, hey, we're not putting anything in our cookbooks that you can't buy at Walmart. And that's affordable. Because that's how we operated. At times, one of us was not working or both of us. There were times where both of us were out of a job and we had, you know, very limited funds. So for me, it was important to recommend the same types of foods that I eat. You know, it's all real food, nothing fancy. And furthermore, I don't know about you, Tamara, but I've read keto books before that don't contain the net carbs for what you're eating.
Oh,
it drives me crazy.
Or they do, and the carbs, net carbs are like 30. And you're like, what?
You're like, no, that's a little much for that one piece of chocolate brownie.
Yeah.
Seriously. So I actually spent probably 10 full days looking up hundreds of food items. That way I could put the accurate net carb count and I checked it against multiple sources. So that way the readers have it all in one spot. I don't want them going to apps and, you know, websites that they don't trust. That way they can rely on the foods that I recommend. There's 250 in the book with a 15-page shopping list. And I think it's a great place to get started.
I think that's awesome. People are going to love that part of it.
I just hate flipping around. Like, where do I go for this? Where do I go for that? Like, I want starter recipes, meal planning ideas, carb counts, all in one place. I want it to be as helpful as possible. That was my goal.
Awesome. Done. Achieved.
Done. Check. Check. And this might make you laugh, but I have copies of my own book all over the house. I have one next to my bed. I have one in the kitchen. I got one in the office. I even have one under the seat of my car because I don't remember all the food net carb count. So I'm constantly looking up stuff. Like, you know, I don't even think I wrote this in my notes, but I even included fast food recommendations. I stole a little bit from our fast food guide and put some just very specific suggestions. So if you're at Starbucks or, you know, McDonald's or something, you can pull out this book and reference it as to what to order.
Yeah. Because, you know, having things easy
in one place.
Convenient. Yeah.
Yeah. You need it. That's why it's 400 pages.
It takes away some of your excuses, you know?
Exactly.
Okay. In your book, you talk a lot about keto police. Actually, you and I talk a lot about keto police because we see them a lot. So for people who don't know who keto police are, who are they and why do we keep having to deal with them?
I think the keto police are known by many names. Some people call them Karen, which is funny. Sorry, Karens, if you're listening. I don't know why. Some people call them the keto Nazis. Some people call them the food police, a little bit more benign. So they're known by a lot of different names. I can call them some of my family members. Because some of my own family members, coworkers, you know, and even a spouse at times, I'm sure we can all relate that you've had these people in your life. They cringe when they see you eating something you shouldn't. They offer unsolicited advice about how to lose weight. And they just don't shut up. They just keep, and they're mean sometimes. You know, it might even be the tone or the look that they give you. And they think they're being helpful. That's the great irony of the situation.
Yeah. And why do people do that? Like, why do they keep, you know, feeling like they need to monitor what you're eating and tell you what you're eating is wrong?
Well, I put a whole chapter in the book on that, Tamara, because I feel like this can be an area where it derails weight loss. You'll be doing great. Everything's going fine. You're on Dirty Lazy Keto. And then you show up at, you know, a social situation, one of these food police or Karens or food Nazis or whatever you want to call them, or spouse. No, I'm just kidding. You know, they show up and then all of a sudden they're saying stuff like, oh, you're eating mayonnaise? I thought you were on a diet. Yeah. Right? We've all heard that. Or, oh, you put Splenda in your coffee? I think that causes cancer. I mean, they really do. I mean, I remember I had lost about 50 or 60 pounds and I was at a brunch and someone who I didn't really know, who knew I was losing weight, but he looked over at my brunch plate and he goes, oh, you know, you'd probably lose more weight if you didn't eat so many eggs. Because I had like a heaping serving of scrambled eggs on my plate with butter. And he was like trying to offer me this advice. And I'm thinking, who in the hell are you? Back off my breakfast, sir. You know? Yeah. But still to this day, Tamara, I still encounter these food police all the time.
Well, on the website, on your Facebook, you're very good about stopping people like that. But a lot, you know, we spend a lot of time getting those people off, you know, muting them because I don't know.
That's why I gave it a whole chapter. It's in there.
Yeah. And that's why I think your book is great because it's saying ignore the keto police and do what works for you in a flexible way. So,
it takes time to get that vocabulary.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I like about the book, I don't know how other people will, but the eating plans and recipes, those are fantastic. But I actually like the later part of the book where you go, you know, deeper into like other kinds of things. So what kinds of things do you go beyond just like, you know, a food list? Like what issues do you talk about and try to address in those, you know, the later part of the book?
Well, I think you're right. The cutting of the carbs, that's the beginning. And we all do really well at that, right? I think we do. Like most of us, like any diet, really. Cutting carbs, cutting back on sugar, giving up a certain food for 30 days. Like we've all tried these different programs and they go really well at first. Mm-hmm. But then what? What, you know, I mentioned this earlier, what happens next? It's not unusual for the first time, you know, some guy hits on you for you to get freaked out and then start eating. Yeah. And people are like, well, why would that happen? Or it might make you feel uncomfortable when someone pays you a compliment about how you look. You know, no one talks about that stuff. And those are the issues that I really tried to dive into, because as someone who's lost 140 pounds, I went through these issues myself and they were hard. And I had no one to talk to. There was no support group. When I started losing weight this way, keto was not in the mainstream vocabulary. It wasn't something people talked about. This was back when like paleo was kind of just being talked about then. But really, mm-hmm. I didn't know what I was doing. I just kept trying to lose weight and keep my head down. I didn't talk about it to anyone. And it's almost a miracle that I got through it, because, you know, no one gave me any advice. I didn't have any support except for my husband and my kids. So I want to be that person for everybody else. I don't want them to fall down and give up when they have a cruise scheduled next week, or when they're at a birthday party, or their mother-in-law is saying something weird to them, or bringing them a dish and insisting that they have some. You know, those are the skills that we need help with.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And my favorite chapters, on this subject are chapter 8, Planning to Fail, and chapter 9, Be Vulnerable. Because Stephanie, you are so vulnerable in them. I was surprised. I was like, wow, she really got vulnerable. I mean, you
I don't even think you knew half of that stuff.
No.
All my secrets are in there.
I didn't. And you know what? And I'm so proud of you. I mean, you financial struggles, parenting struggles, self-esteem, like, and it's surprising because when I first met you, you wouldn't even, I asked you, hey, what diet are you on? And you wouldn't even answer. Like, you were very hush, hush, clam. You know, you were so worried people were going to judge you.
And well, who wouldn't? It's like girls eating sour cream and losing weight. Like they might get mad. That did not go over well.
No, people do get mad. The
people get very pissed. They're like, she's eating cheese. That's not fair. I know. They do. So I don't tell, I did not talk about this for years. I kept it quite
you
secret.
You didn't. So to see that, to read, that's why they're my favorite chapter, because to read you just like open up, I was floored.
You're like, and here she comes.
I know. So my question is, was it hard to be so vulnerable in the book?
Well, I'm going to read something back to you, my friend, Tamara. Okay. A lot of us have read the bestseller book, Girl, Wash Your Face. Mm-hmm. It's a fun book. Mm-hmm. And there's a part that she wrote that I actually typed up and put above my desk to help me when I was writing those chapters. I'm going to read it to you.
Okay.
Finding the courage to be honest about who you are or what you're going through is like throwing yourself into the deep end of the pool and fighting to swim once you've hit the cold water. It won't necessarily be pleasant, but once you're in, it's done. The longer you live in a state of honesty, the easier it becomes to simply exist there all the time.
That's nice. Like it's that? Like a tube of toothpaste. Like once the toothpaste comes out, you can't put it back in, you know? And I feel like once you started opening up, there was no turning back, right?
Well, you might find this surprising, but telling the truth about those parts of the weight loss journey, mm-hmm. it has been the most liberating experience of my life. Wow. I have never felt happier, more alive, more confident about who I am and what I stand for. And I really do think that once you tell the truth about parts of your life that are dark and kind of scary, I think it unburdens you to really blossom and be the person you're meant to become.
Wow. That's
look wonderful. At me getting all deep.
I know.
It's true though. I literally lost like pounds when I started to admit some of the struggles that I've had. Yeah. And I think that me doing so and being the first one to be brave and go first could help readers recognize what parts of their life are holding them back.
Yeah. And a lot of your book is kind of silly and sassy, but it actually gets pretty deep in there. I know, but it's needed.
It is needed because weight loss is not all fun and games. It's not just whipping up a chocolate mug cake, and saying no to donuts and then it's all over. It's not how it works. This shit's complicated, people.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Well, how come you don't talk about like some of the other things that other, a lot of the, and the big best-selling books are talking about, like clean eating or grass-fed beef or organic food, because that's a big component of a lot of other, you know, current trendy diets. So why aren't you talking about that stuff?
Tamara, as someone on a budget, maybe that's my motivation, but I really don't think you can throw money at a weight problem and expect it to go away. Mm-hmm. I've watched a lot of famous rich people, movie stars, world leaders. You know, I even watch doctors that I work with, and they struggle with obesity. So I don't know about this buying expensive organic ingredients or eating clean. I don't think it guarantees weight loss. If that's your lifestyle, that being said, you know, if that's your values and your lifestyle, like I've mentioned, my daughter is vegan. That's cool. Like, I get that. And I'm behind you 100%. If you want to buy line caught fish, you know, for like $80 a pound, good for you. I can't do that. And I don't share those values. In my experience, we just do the best we can. Like I mentioned, most of the time, my family has only had one parent working. There's been times where, you know, no parents were working. So we didn't have that luxury to even consider shopping in that way. But even if I did have a lot of money, I don't think I would shop any differently. I mean, I love thrift stores. I love hot dogs. I mean, I go to like discount stores to get like the lost leader item, and I stock up in my garage. And I like Diet Coke. I want sugar-free Jell-O, protein bars, you know, whatever, beer. I'm not going to change my lifestyle just to be all fancy. It's not needed. I don't think I have to pretend. I'm going to be me. And that has worked out pretty well.
Yeah. Well, you know, your book really is introducing something pretty new and I would say cutting edge in a weird way, because it's saying you don't have to follow those crazy, you know, expensive rules. So what are the criticisms that people are having about, or what have you found are the criticisms of Dirty Lazy Keto, and how do you address the critiques that come your way?
Well, I do think there's a lot of misunderstandings and myths out there. I don't know if they're necessarily about Dirty Lazy Keto, like my story, but probably more about dirty keto in general. I think that's like, I was interviewed with Playboy magazine, which my husband thinks is so cool, by the way. He totally works that into conversation. No pictures. Sorry.
Yeah. My wife's in Playboy.
Yes, I'm sorry. My wife is in Playboy. Yes. But it was an article like about the merits of dirty keto. And it was a for and against article. Like, is it good? Is it bad? Is it horrible? And people think, oh, you're on dirty keto, you must be eating processed meat all day and, you know, processed fake cheese and just a bunch of garbage, like sugar-free Red Bull and blah, 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 blah. Well, for one, yes, I might be having some of those foods. But number two, I might not. Like, I like having the option to have a hot dog if I want to. I would like the option of making lunches for my family with deli meat, you know, purchased from the grocery store. I don't need to be all fancy pants and, you know, have a bunch of line caught organic stuff. Exactly. I'm just a real person. And I think we all need that flexibility. Like, what's so wrong with peanut butter? Really?
Yeah.
Seriously. And that's where they get riled up. It's more about the ingredients and, you know, putting Splenda in your coffee or making sugar-free mug cake or whatever it is you feel like doing. It's my choice and my family values.
Yeah.
And plus, the people who are usually talking are skinny. Have you noticed that?
it's not sustainable. Like,
no.
You can't, you know, and what's trendy right now is not going to be trendy tomorrow.
Well, I'm sure they're right. I mean, that's the funny thing. Yes, I'm sure like eating all this healthy stuff is really good for you, but I'm not interested in doing it. And I'm not going to do it. Like, even if the values are correct, like, I'm sure it might be better for me, but I don't really care. I don't think that's so. I mean, can I just be honest? Like, that's not important to me.
Yeah.
But that being said, there are a lot of people who follow Dirty Lazy Keto who do enjoy a more strict lifestyle. And they just like the open-mindedness of the program. Yeah. They like the flexibility to maybe eat clean during the week. And then on the weekends, have low-carb beer with their friends and go to a baseball game and have, you know, hot dog or get fast food once in a while. That's another one. That's okay too. You don't have to be perfect to be successful with weight loss.
Yeah. You need flexibility. Otherwise, you're just setting yourself up for failure.
Exactly.
So for people who would want to write a semi-autobiographical book, because you do talk a lot about yourself in addition to the dieting advice. So what would you say to people? Just as I know this is a different take than what's in the book, but what is it involved in writing a book? And like, what advice would you have about that?
Well, I definitely don't think people should go into writing a book if they're trying to be famous or rich. That's not going to happen.
Darn.
No, that's not. I mean, I think you could go on YouTube and do some crazy video and go about that in a different way. For me, my experience was just to tell the truth. And for me, I had to tell the truth. It was like I knew a secret. I think it's similar to the Fountain of Youth thing for me, where there was no way I wasn't going to tell people this. So I was determined to figure out a way to get that out there. I am so passionate about this, Tamara. I literally think about Dirty Lazy Keto and food from the moment I wake up. Literally, the second my eyes are open, I'm like, what's for breakfast? Till the time I go to bed. And I'm thinking about ways I can get the word out about how this lifestyle has changed me. I've shared with you on the podcast that I'll get up at 4 a.m. and get started. And I'll work 18-hour days. And I do this multiple days in a row. I've missed out on a lot of the rest of my life because I'm so determined and so passionate about telling the truth about how this can help. So if someone feels that passionately about a subject or a story that they want to tell, then they should go for it because there's people out there that want to listen.
Awesome. Yeah. So my last question, Stephanie, is what's the main takeaway you want people to get from your book if you had to just give one main thing?
I wrote this on my whiteboard a couple of years ago, and I hid it by a piece of paper because I was almost like embarrassed to look at it. But as this journey has progressed, I've slowly peeled away the little sticky notes and moved away the signs and the magnets that were covering what I wrote. And to the point now where it's front and center and loud and proud. But what I wrote is my goal is to help as many people as possible and to tell people that you are not broken. Do not feel ashamed about your struggles, that you are not alone, and that Dirty Lazy Keto is here to help you.
Oh, we have to end on that note.
That's it.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Stephanie. I loved hearing about your book. I loved reading your book, and I hope everyone
did out you there- see your name in there, Miss Tamara?
I did.
I think you were in there 3 times.
Well, it's funny. I noticed one about the keto police, and you're quoting me, and I'm like, I don't remember saying.
Oh, you totally did. I can tell you, we were walking the dogs that morning, and as soon as you said it, I'm like, that's really good. And I came home and wrote it down.
But some of my advice is really smart. Bad. You'll tell me stuff, and you're like, remember when you said that? And I was like, did I say that? That's terrible advice.
No, you're very smart. You're my Oprah.
Aw, thank you.
So I hope our listeners will stay tuned because after this podcast ends, like I mentioned, there'll be a clip from Macmillan Audio, which shares an excerpt from the new book, Dirty Lazy Keto, Get Started Losing Weight While Breaking the Rules, St. Martin's Press, coming out May 5th.
Thank you for listening to this clip provided to you by Macmillan Audio. To hear more, look for this title wherever audiobooks are sold.
Breaking myths about dieting. For years, I didn't tell anyone how I lost weight. Instead of risking an argument about whether my food choices were nutritionally sound, I remained silent. The truth is that I probably couldn't have defended myself properly at the time. I felt like the way I lost weight was by doing something wrong. Who eats sour cream and goes down 11 pant sizes? It seemed biologically suspicious. Growing up, I listened to my family doctor, insisting I had to eat low-fat foods and restrict calories to lose weight. But here I was as a grown-up eating cheese and bacon, never feeling hungry, and yet losing weight. Surely I was doing something illegal? It's taken me years to build up enough courage to talk about this stuff. The key reason I think I've been successful with losing weight is that I finally figured out what worked for me and not everybody else. I stopped trying to be the kind of eater the world wanted me to become. I reevaluated dieting truths by asking myself if they still made sense to me. For my entire life, I've been told how I should eat. In the end, I had to throw out that rule book for me to lose weight. Hashtag break the rules. Senseless guidelines I disobey. Fat is bad for you. Never eat in front of the television. You must limit your calories. Eat only when you're hungry. Always choose non-fat or low-fat foods. Eat slowly. Desserts are bad for you. Don't snack between meals. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Fast food is unhealthy. Ladies order salads. Never have seconds. Oatmeal is the ideal breakfast food. Fried foods cause high cholesterol. Girls shouldn't eat that much. Oh, don't use food to cover up your feelings. No snacking after dinner. Eat foods that stick to your ribs, like rice or pasta. Eggs cause high cholesterol. Weight loss and hunger go hand in hand. You can't eat desserts and lose weight at the same time. I've learned that by challenging these weight loss myths, I could rewrite new truths. I like to eat while watching television, so sue me. Who says eating and relaxing have to be separate activities? Who really cares if I eat seconds at dinner? No one is keeping score. Instead of feeling like crap about myself for eating fast food or munching at a snack before dinner, I decided to say, enough. I've finally broken the cycle of guilt, inadequacy, and shame that led me to constantly overeat. Instead of disappointing myself by constantly not meeting expectations, I'm consciously walking away from these silly notions altogether. I'm never going to be a dainty, ladylike eater who just orders a salad. I would feel unsatisfied. I prefer to eat large portions of food. And if I'm laying it all out there, I will admit to eating frequently as well. I decided to do what worked for me and nobody else.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Dirty Lazy Girl podcast.
And don't forget to visit DirtyLazyKeto.com, where you can join the conversation and gain access to all kinds of free content to help you on your Dirty Lazy journey.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, consider supporting us by subscribing, rating, and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts.
Be sure to stay tuned for our next Dirty Lazy Girl podcast, where we give you even more tips and support.
You don't have to be perfect to be successful.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.